Our Torah portion this week is called Tetzaveh, and it means you command, which is Exodus 27 through 30, different parts. And it is where Yahweh commands Moses to command the people of Israel in context to bring clean oil for the lampstand. And also he's commanded to command or to ordain Aaron and his sons as priests. The contents of the store portion include oil for the lampstand that the children of Israel to bring to keep the lamp burning at all times, the garments for Aaron the high priest and his sons, making them and a very exact description of them, ordination of Aaron and his sons as priests, which is a 7-day process at least, and the altar of incense. These are examples in an image on the overhead of artists' renditions of the garments of the priest, the high priest. And they all have certain things in common, the blue robe, the ephod, or breastplate, which actually the word there means pouch, which held two stones for judgment. And they're all relatively similar, and you may have seen things like this before. This is an interesting illustration I found, which illustrates Moses ordaining Aaron, which involved washing and purifying him, dressing him with certain clothes. I thought that was an interesting image. The altar of incense, which is right before the Holy of Holies. And I just have an image here of the high priest, a medium shot of him with the ephod and the stones in the ephod. And what I wanted to focus on were the stones, because I found this just fascinating. I mean, for years I've found this fascinating. And it's much like a puzzle that maybe we have a few of the pieces to, but let's start in Exodus 28, 9 through 12. And I want to read these. And you shall take 2 Shoham stones, in this translation, which is onyx, basically, and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel, 6 of their names on one stone, and the remaining 6 names on the other stone, according to their birth, with the work of an engraver in stone, like the engravings of a signet. Engrave the 2 stones with the names of the sons of Israel, and set them in settings of gold. And you shall put the 2 stones on the shoulder pieces of the shoulder garment as stones of remembrance or memorial for the sons of Israel. And Aaron shall bear their names before Yahweh on his 2 shoulders as a remembrance. Go back and just glance at this image here again where you can see the 2 stones on his shoulders, or this artist's interpretation of it. Look at, in the same chapter here, verse 17 through 21. And you shall put settings of stones in it, talking about the breastpiece, the ephod, the pouch. You shall put settings of stones in it, 4 rows of stones. The first row is a ruby, a topaz, and an emerald. It's very specific. And the second row is a turquoise, a sapphire, and a diamond. And the third row is a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst. And the fourth row is a beryl, and a shoham, and a jasper. They are set in gold settings. And the stones are according to the names of the sons of Israel. 12 according to their names, like the engravings of a signet, each one with its own name, for the 12 tribes. Now, on my overhead, I've underlined according to the names, which is twice in that verse, according to the names. And then names is mentioned again, a third time. Seems important. If you notice in the previous passage, the listing on the 2 shoulder stones were according to their birth. Interesting. He's very specific about which stones and the order that they're in. Exodus 28, 29. One last verse here. And Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of right ruling, or judgment, over his heart when he goes into the set apart or holy of holies, holy place, for a remembrance before Yahweh continually. Again, for a memorial. So these stones are all about being a memorial. They're to be something not forgotten. Now, this is my little periodic table of the tribes. For those who don't have visuals, imagine a periodic table with five columns across, and the first column has the four sons of Leah that were first born, and the second column are the two sons of Bilhah, Rachel's servant, and then the next column is two sons, Gad and Asher of Zilpah, and then Leah had two more kids in order, Issachar and Zebulun. These are English translations of these words. And then Rachel had Yosef and Benjamin in the fifth column. And what's interesting to me about this is that in order, and by the way, Dinah is a dotted block on that fourth column under Leah, because she did have Dinah, and we don't want to forget Dinah. It was the only daughter that Jacob had that we know of. But what's interesting to me is that this is relatively the birth order, reading down each column. And I've color-coded the mothers. Leah is yellow, first and fourth column, and so on. So that you might see little patterns if you play with these blocks, as I have for years, putting them in the order around the camp, putting them in the order of the marching order, putting in order of all these different times that they're listed. It's very amazing how most of these folks are grouped together by mother, either around the corners of a camp or in the marching order, with an exception. It seems like Gad and Asher are almost always split apart. Probably talked too much in class and had to split them up. But we're talking about two stones. Put half on one, half on the other. So in the two stones, now I've just taken the first six and put them on one stone. We're not sure of this. I'm playing here. So we'd have Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, and Naphtali on one stone. And then we would have Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Yosef, and Benjamin on the other stone. Now, this is assuming that Yosef is the one tribe that would be one of the 12, when we do know that Yosef was actually Ephraim and Manasseh. So I've indicated that here. Let's look at it another way. If we included Ephraim and Manasseh instead of Yosef, because we don't know which way they really did this, first of all, we've got 13 blocks now in the two columns. First column being, or the first stone, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Yehuda, Dan, and Naphtali. Same. But the other column now would be Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin. I think Benjamin was born before Manasseh and Ephraim. And Manasseh was the firstborn. But we're used to hearing Ephraim and Manasseh because they got switched by Isaac at the blessing. But that is what the best I can tell, I understand the birth order to be. Ephraim is the very last one, the very youngest. Now, I don't know which is right, but this is 13 of them. So if we're to have the 12 tribes on two stones, we'd have to leave one out, okay, maybe Levi, to have 12 instead of 13. And if we did that, then what? Aaron isn't representing that tribe anymore? I don't know. This is the type of thing that teachers can get into conjecture and making it work the way they want, and I'm trying to be careful not to do that. I think it's probably more realistic that Yosef was one of the tribes at this point. Not sure. And that he wore all 12, including Levi. So, according to their names, that was according to their birth for the shoulder stones. Now, for the ephod, it was to be according to their names. Four rows of three. All right? Well, we can't use the English names, even though that would be easy, because Asher would be the first one. We have to use the Hebrew names. And when you look at the Hebrew, in the order of the alphabet there, you have Aleph being the with Asher, Beit being for Benjamin, Gimel, Gad. This is interesting. It's A, B, C, D, actually. Dalet for Dan. Zayin for Zebulun. A Yod for Yehuda. A Yod Samek for Yosef. A Yod Shin for Yisachar. A Lamed for Levi. A Nun for Naphtali. A Resh for Reuben. And a Shin for Simeon. So, again, what if you're supposed to have the other ones in there too for that ephod? I'm not sure. Again, the problem would be that there's 13 if you include Levi, but maybe you don't. But what's interesting about this is that Ephraim starts with an aleph and becomes the very top one with EP, essentially, in Hebrew, over AS. It's basically AP over AS. So Ephraim becomes number one. Now remember back here that Ephraim would have been the last over there by birth, the youngest? Here, Ephraim would be the first. You ever heard a verse that says something like, the last will be first? I just wonder. And here's the order of them with Manasseh here after Levi. But it's interesting that Ephraim ends up being the first one of the list, if by name in Hebrew, including Ephraim and Manasseh. However, they go on four rows of three. So this is probably how they would look. And if you can imagine it without visuals, it's four rows of three rectangles that look like a square. And on the top right, because in Hebrew everything is always read from the opposite direction than we do in English or Spanish, we read from right to left. So we'd have Asher, Benjamin, and Gad as the top row, which is the first row, a topaz and an emerald. And I've seen so many different interpretations of this, and none of them that I've seen anywhere on the internet or anything are this. I don't know why. Maybe I'm wrong. But it seems logical, Hebrew, alphabetical, and first row, second row, third row. So the second row there is Dan, Zebulun, and Judah. Third row, Yosef, Yisachar, and Levi. And the last one, Naphtali, Reuben, and Simeon. Now, remember I was talking about the mothers are often grouped together? Look at Leah's children there. All six of them in this square are right there together. Just an interesting observation. And usually in the other ones, the other mother's children's are also together, but they're not in this case, if that's a correct configuration. I looked at other stones in Scripture. I'm going to break out here. Other stones, I thought it was interesting in Leviticus 14 where it talks about the priest shall commit, we're talking about leprosy found in the walls of a home, and that the only way to get rid of this leprosy is to remove these stones. And listen to this language. Then the priest shall command, and they shall remove the stones with the plague in them, and they shall throw them outside the city into an unclean place. And they shall take other stones and put them in the place of those stones. Now, in my head, I'm thinking about this, the temple, the building, the body, the living stones of the congregation, and verses about replacing those who fall away, branches broken off so that others may be grafted in. Things like that are just in the back of my mind as I'm listening to this. And they shall take other stones and put them in the place of those stones. And if the plague comes back, he shall break down the house, its stones and its timber, and all the plaster of the house, and he shall bring them outside the city to an unclean place. Makes me think about the temple that was destroyed in 70 AD. And a couple of other times the temple was destroyed. And it was almost always involving some sort of a plague of Israel turning to other gods and so on. Thought that was interesting. Isaiah 54, 11 through 13. O you afflicted one, tossed with storm and not comforted. He's talking to Israel here, I think. I am setting your stones in antimony. Looked up that word. It looks like silver. It's a metal chunk. It looks like silver, but it's closer to lead. and they mix it in lead with lead and tin and so on to give it a little more strength, antimony. So it's a lot like the settings of gold, but it's a silver-looking mineral. And shall lay your foundations with sapphires. Now, it's the first time we've heard of these stones as foundations. And shall make your battlements of rubies. Those are walls. And your gates of crystal, and your walls of precious stones. Now, those of you that have read the Revelation might think this is starting to sound familiar as far as the new city. And your children taught by Yahweh, and the peace of your children great. I love that because it reminds me of the Jeremiah 31:31 prophecy of everyone will be taught by Yahweh. There'll be no need for everyone to say, you got to know about Yahweh, I'll tell you. Everyone will just know. Ezekiel 28. Now, this is in the context that many use to talk about describing Lucifer and his fall from grace, his fall from the heavens. So I'm just taking two verses out of it. You were in Eden, the Garden of Elohim. It's actually, by the way, the prophecy is actually a prophecy to the king of Tyre, which was just one of the list of prophecies to the various nations around that area at that time of, hey, you're going to be destroyed. But it's also used because of this. In verse 14, it talks about the anointed cherub or angel. So you were in Eden, the Garden of Elohim. Every precious stone was your covering. The ruby, the topaz, and diamond. By the way, almost exactly the same as the listing before on the breastplate. Beryl, shoam, and jasper. Sapphire, turquoise, and emerald, and gold. And what's interesting is it left out a row. And in another place where it talks about the gems around the sides of the temple, it's the north side that's missing here of the four rows. You were the anointed cherub that covered, and I placed you. You were on the set-apart mountain of Elohim. You walked up and down in the midst of stones of fire. Doesn't that sound fun? Stones of fire are precious stones because they catch light and they sparkle and glimmer and they look like fire in a way. Zechariah 9:16, under the category of other stones, and Yahweh, their Elohim, shall save them in that day as the flock of his people, for the stones of a diadem or a crown sparkling over his land. So we have stones on the ephod which represent the tribes, actually the sons of Israel by name. They represent people. And we have here Yahweh talking about in that day, his flock are the stones. So we're starting to get this precious stones is people. In the renewed covenant, a few places that stones are listed. I like this one, Matthew 3:9. And do not think to say to yourselves, we have Abraham as our father. For I say to you that Elohim is able to raise up children to Abraham from these stones. Stones, people, sons of Abraham. Luke 19:40. But he answering said to them, I say to you that if these shall be silent, the stones would cry out. And that's when he's coming into Jerusalem on a donkey, and his disciples are yelling, Baruch haba Hashem, blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh. Essentially, here is our king, because that lines up with other scriptures regarding a king. And the Pharisees said, tell your disciples to shut up. And he said, if I say to you that if these shall be silent, then the stones would cry out. And I kind of get that as the beginning of this glimpse I have of the stones being disciples. Okay? The stones are disciples. 1 Peter 2, 4 through 6. Drawing near to him, Yeshua, a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by Elohim and precious. Getting the feeling of these precious stones there, choosing and precious. And he's the chief cornerstone. 5, you also as living stones are being built up, a spiritual house, a set-apart priesthood, to offer up spiritual slaughter or offerings acceptable to Elohim through Yeshua, Messiah. It's interesting that in atonement for Israel, a bull, goats, rams, and so on were provided to the high priest. They made these sacrifices and offerings through the high priest. Continuing that in verse 7, "This preciousness then is for you who believe, but to those who are disobedient, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone." That's an allusion, by the way, to not only cornerstones of a building, but a chief cornerstone is the head, or often the top pinnacle of a pyramid, which these folks were all very familiar with. And it was often solid gold on those pyramids. "And a stone of stumbling and a rock that makes for falling, who stumble because they're disobedient to the word," which is the word Torah, "to which they also were appointed. But you are a chosen race," chosen again, "a royal priesthood, a set-apart nation, holy, a people for possession, treasure, that you should proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light," Torah, light, "who once were not a people, but now the people of Elohim, who had not obtained compassion, but now obtained compassion." We need it. A few more verses here in Revelation. 21, verse 14, "And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12, this translation says emissaries, apostles, disciples, but apostles, because it's an appointed office, of the Lamb. 19, "And the fountains of the wall of the city were adorned with all kinds of precious stones, the first foundation, jasper, the second, sapphire, the third, agate, the fourth, emerald." These don't line up exactly with the ephod jewels, but depending on the translation and who you're reading the studies of, agate could mean a bunch of different things, like quartz could mean a bunch of different things. Chalcedony could be several of these things, like sardonyx or onyx, that all come from. So it's just a little confusing. I've been unable to really nail down an exact link between the list of them in the New Covenant and the list of them in the Torah. "And the foundations of the wall of the city were," okay, "jasper, sapphire, agate, emerald. The fifth, sardonyx, which is red onyx, red striped onyx. The sixth, ruby. The seventh, chrysolite. The eighth, beryl. The ninth, topaz. The tenth, chrysoprase, which is green. It's a green chalcedony. In fact, chrysoprase is Greek, which means gold green. The 11th, jacinth, which is a very beautiful red crystal. And the 12th, amethyst, purple. These, on the overhead, are pictures of each of these gemstones that I actually went out and collected, buying them from all over the world on eBay, searching for chrysoprase or sapphire or whatever in its raw form. The first one up there is jasper, and there's sapphire. The third one there is chalcedony, which is a very frosty, snowy-looking stone. Emerald, sardonyx. I think that's sardon. This is zircon. This is basically ones you might know of, like peridot and so on, that were called chrysolite at the time. Topaz, beryl. And at the end there, amethyst. And what's interesting to me about this is that these are things that Yahweh thinks is so beautiful that he just equates them to his people, his children. And they are beautiful. They're colorful, and they're precious. This is what each one looks like. I also went out and collected, it took about a year to do this, a polished version of each one of these stones. Chalcedony looks like a pearl. Sardius, jacinth is that clear red, looks almost like red jello. Topaz is just a tan sort of a crystal-looking thing. And so you can see each one there with a polished version of it. And I was going to bring that and pass it around, but no need. I'll just show a picture of it. Conclusions. One thing I got out of this is that precious stones represent chosen, appointed people. Not only that, I think that they represent leaders. In other words, they're the 12 leaders of Israel, 12 sons of Israel. As a memorial, we're to remember them. They're our president in a statue to memorize, you know, to remember, kind of a thing. And they're also of the 12 apostles in the New Covenant around the foundations of the new city. So not everybody, but the apostles and the leaders. So I get that they're appointed, they're chosen, and they're appointed people, probably leaders. Second clue thing I got out of this was the high priest Aaron, bearing the stones of the tribes of Israel as a memorial, I believe represents Yahshua, our high priest, the chief cornerstone, bearing us. Because it talks about we are a holy priesthood, living stones that are being built up into a new temple. And third, the new city is built on the foundation of precious stones. Now, I've always been toying with this theory that the entire book of Revelation, because it's a vision, is metaphorical. That nothing in it is really a physical occurrence as much as it's metaphorical. Because all the other visions of Daniel and everybody else, of beasts with six heads, seven heads, and everything else, are metaphorical of kingdoms taking over and doing different things. Not positive of that, but it seems to make sense. In that case, the foundation of the New Jerusalem, built on the foundations of these leaders, of these precious stones, the teachings, the examples of the apostles, and so on, makes sense in that context. That we have to come in through the gates of Israel, one of the 12 tribes. We have to basically become a part of Israel. Before I wrap, though, on the way up here, I came up with another thought that I really wanted to share, and that was, why precious stones? And I have these seven items that... One, these precious stones or gemstones are refined. They only occur as a result of extreme heat, extreme pressure, volcanoes under the earth, all these different things that contribute to the formation of a gemstone is sort of a refining, because they're very clean and they're very pure in most cases. Second, they're beautiful. They're pleasant to look at. I mean, you can just look at them all day. Third, they're very hard. They're durable. And I believe that that means that they represent that his people are eternal. Because these stones, gemstones, don't decay. They don't tarnish. And in fact, what makes them have different colors, like chrysoprase being green, is because it has a little nickel, metal in it. Nickel tarnishes, silver tarnishes, iron tarnishes, all these different things that tarnish as metals when mixed into a gemstone. Sardonyx is from iron in it, making it red. It doesn't tarnish anymore. The metal doesn't rust or decay anymore. So that was an interesting point to me. They're extremely rare. They're extremely valuable. In the old days, the way where jewelry came from was that the way you kept something valuable like this was you wore it on your neck or on your hand or somewhere that was, you're not going to lose it because they're very valuable. Expensive. This one, six, they glorify light. They glorify light. They shed it in different directions. They make it colorful. They're called stones of fire because of just how they catch light and magnify light in different ways. Which, Torah, right? The people of Yahweh. I hope you're getting the parallels here. The people of Yahweh glorify Torah. We represent it. We shine as a light to the world. And seven, it's often a symbol of royalty or of a rich heir. It used to be in the old days that gemstones were on crowns of a king. They were on extremely wealthy or royal nobles, noble people of civilization. And I just thought of those seven characteristics of stones, which might possibly be why he uses them as an example of how he views us. Baruch Hashem. If you'd stand, please. Um